When going through hard times, there's nothing quite like a personal letter from a trusted friend to lift our spirits. Following the elation of Easter, Northgate will consider the significant difficulties faced by early Christians who received a much-needed word of encouragement from their friend Peter. In Dear Friend, a four-week series through the letter of 1 Peter, we'll hear and apply these messages to our own lives. You can have hope. You can be holy. You can live like Jesus. You can overcome this.
All right. Hey, everybody. Good morning. How you doing? What an improvement a week can make, isn't it? Isn't that great? Go from last Sunday to this Sunday. That's the upside of New York weather. You never know what it's going to do, which can be last weekend, or you never know what it's going to do, which can be today. And I'm really glad that you guys are here. If you weren't here last week, we did have an awesome morning. Oh, I almost fell off the step. See, you put on glasses, it changes things. I'm just wearing glasses to hide the fact that I got sunburned yesterday in a 50-degree day in April. I just wanted to distract you from that. But if I fall off the stage, it's really going to not serve its purpose. So anyway, I'm really glad you're here. Last weekend was a great weekend, and this is going to be another great weekend together. In our series called Dear Friend, we've been looking at the letter of 1 Peter. We've been looking at Peter writing to these churches in Asia, and he's imploring his friends there about some things that they can do in life. And if you're here week one, you heard him say, Dear friend, we can live with hope. And Pastor Marcia talked about the nebulous necessity of hope. And if any of you have the SAT, and you get the word nebulous, you need to come back and thank Pastor Marcia for that, because you probably were not going to get it otherwise. And then last week, Pastor Vern talked about, they said, Dear friend, we can be holy. And he said, you know, a lot of people are looking for happiness. People want to find happiness, but what they miss is that the path to happiness is holiness. And he laid that out from the book of 1 Peter. And if you missed that, please go back and take that in on our app or our website somewhere. It's available all over. And there's also been this theme, this strange theme of singing. Both of them have sung during their messages. Marcia's our resident English person now. We all speak it, just some of us don't do it as well. And there's been singing in both of those messages, and I feel a little pressure to continue that, to carry that on. We'll get back to that, maybe not. And today, we're looking at what Peter says, where he says, Dear friend, we can live like Jesus. He gives us this encouragement that we can live like Jesus. Now, before we get too far into that, before that sounds too good, sometimes people have a skewed image in their head of what living like Jesus really means. You know, people are like, well, okay, he did a lot of fishing. He spent a lot of time on boats with his friends, right? Sounds like a good gig. I want to live like Jesus. Or they'll say, I'll live like Jesus. I'll just calmly going around blessing people and praying for them, and so I can live like Jesus. But that, while that is in the Bible, that differs a lot from what we see in the Bible. Jesus did not live a cushy, easy, feel-good lifestyle. Maybe some of you missed Easter Sunday. Maybe you didn't know this, but he was actually arrested and beaten and tortured and killed. So he suffered greatly when we talk about living like Jesus. So before we just say like, yeah, I want to sign up for that, right? WWJD, let's go, let's do it. Before you do that, I just need to be honest with you and let you know that what Jesus did was endure a great amount of suffering on our behalf. And that's actually what Peter points to as the example that we need to follow and what we're going to see from 1 Peter chapter 2 and 3 today. In 1 Peter 2:21, here's what he points to. He says, you want to be like Jesus, to this you were called. And if you're thinking, what is to this? I'm going to get back to that, but thank you for paying attention. Because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. So what was the example of Christ that we should follow? Well, he suffered for us. It says that is what we're called to. So right before that, he says, if you get a beating that you deserve, cool, like good for you. You deserved it. What's that to your credit? But on the other hand, if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, he says, great, because now you are becoming Christ-like. When you suffer for something that you don't deserve for doing good, you're becoming Christ-like, because that's what Christ did. That was the example that he set for us. And I would be remiss to not mention on that subject That Daniel and our base, which is our student ministry, they're hosting a movie night May 18th at 7 o'clock right here. The movie is called Tortured for Christ, just came out a little bit ago. And if you want to see people that have suffered for doing good in the name of Christ, if you want an inspiring, encouraging story, be here that Friday night. You can find information about that anywhere on the Need to Know card. Go to the events section, just scroll down to May 18th on our app. Pastor Vern's Top 10, which is all over. But that would be a really good time for us to consider perhaps how we have not suffered and how others have suffered for Christ. So we know that we can live like Jesus. We know that, but that does not mean that we're just signing up for endless blessings and we're signing up for the best parking spaces and, you know, we're signing up for unlimited favor of God that certain people are under the impression they're in possession of and they can distribute through their work. I sometimes think, you know, if Jesus had only knew how to bottle up the unlimited favor of God, he wouldn't have had to suffer so much, right? If he knew what some people know now, that's a joke. But that's what I think when people tell me that they can control God's favor and that they have that. I'm like, man, I wish Jesus knew what you did. They could have gone differently for him. So living like Jesus can be tough. It can be tough, and I'm not going to try and soft sell you on that part of it. And you guys had a really good energy when I came out here. I've completely taken that away from you, so it's cool. But I want to try and turn that. I want to give you two pieces of good news here. Number one, living like Jesus is without a doubt the best thing that you can spend your life on. Without a doubt, living like Jesus, and we're going to talk about what that looks like. It's the best thing that you can do. And number two, and hopefully this is freeing for you, God is not expecting you to do that on your own. God is not expecting any of us to live like Jesus on our own. And that's what my main point is this morning, is that God will actually give us everything that we need to live like Jesus. So be encouraged by that. If you feel like you're falling short, if you feel like that's a standard that you're not going to reach, that you can't reach on your own, you don't have to. God will equip us for that. He didn't draw this impossible goal out there that we could never reach so that he could sit back in heaven and just watch us try and fail. You know, this isn't like a great reality show for him where he's like, watch these people try and be like Jesus. They stand no chance. God will actually give us what we need. Now, we're going to need to walk closely with him. We're going to need to look for him, to listen to him, to follow when he talks. This isn't magic, but it is possible to live like Jesus. So today, I want to take a look at what living like Jesus looks like from a few of the verses in 1 Peter, particularly at the end of chapter 2 and the beginning of chapter 3. And here's what it says in 2:16. We got to roll back a little bit from where we started. He says, live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover-up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Last week, Pastor Vern said, when we come to Christ, when we receive the power of the Holy Spirit in our lives, we're no longer under the thumb of sinful desires. We can say no to them, which is such great news. You can say no to sin. You can. Even when you give in, you can look back and realize there is a way out. God gave you a way out. You don't have to be a slave to sin anymore. And that's such great news. Now, there are people here that get that in kind of a different way, maybe even a deeper way. And I'm talking about people that God has helped escape a life of addiction. For me, alcohol was such a struggle for me for so long, on and off for this long time, starting in eighth grade and going way later into adulthood than it should have. And it's not that God snapped his fingers and just said, all right, you're done with that, but he made it very clear to me that when the Son sets you free, you are free indeed, and he set me free from that struggle. And I know that some of you have seen that same thing in your own lives in incredible ways. You've experienced that freedom. Now, you're putting in the work. You're taking it one day at a time. You're avoiding situations you know you need to avoid. You're putting yourself in situations you know you need to be in, situations like church or the meetings that you go to. And because of that, you found a freedom in Christ that you never thought was possible. And if that's you today, I want to say it up here. I want to tell you publicly, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of what you've done, of the freedom that you've found in Christ, and never, ever give up that freedom to walk back into a life of slavery and bondage to an addiction that Jesus has freed you from, because life with Jesus is a freedom that we don't get anywhere else. But freedom, it also goes beyond just our addictions. It goes even farther. It's freedom from anger. It's freedom from ego. It's freedom from your past. It's freedom from things that you could not have forgiven on your own. It's freedom from basing your own self-worth on what other people think. There's so many other types of freedom that living like Jesus offers us. And man, I hope that you know that. I really do. For each and every one of you, I hope that you know that. I hope that you're living that out. I hope that you feel that. But we can't miss the warning in this verse either. It says, live as free people, but don't use that freedom as an excuse to sin. Don't ever cheapen God's grace just because God's grace is free and there's nothing that we can do to earn it. Don't ever use that as an excuse to live however you want to because you know that God will just forgive you one more time. God's grace is definitely unmerited. None of us deserve it. It's unmerited, but it might not be unlimited. What do I mean by that? I mean, one, time may run out, right? Jesus could come back, we could die. That's the old youth conference thing where they say, if you walk out of here and get hit by a bus, which the buses at youth conferences were so out of control, apparently. But that's the idea, is you could, time could run out, right? None of us are guaranteed tomorrow. Man, we don't need any more reminders of that. But also, we can choose to sin time and time again and callous our heart in a way that causes us to turn away from God forever. We can continually choose sin and push God away and push God away and push God away. And so I want you to know that if that's your plan, is just to keep sinning and keep asking forgiveness, that you're missing out on this freedom and you're missing out what it means to live like Jesus. So live in freedom. And if you're struggling to find that freedom today, I want to give you this encouragement. If you want to be forgiven for the penalty of sin, ask God. Bible is really clear on that. But if you want to be freed from the grip of sin, ask somebody that loves you for accountability. It's a big difference. The recovering addicts that I talked about earlier, no one did it alone. Nobody did that alone. They got around people that cared about them. And I know that your mom told you you're special, and you probably are, but in this case, you're not. You need help too. You cannot do it alone, and you don't have to do it alone. Because I think there's this wiring where we all want to do it on our own. We want to look at sin. We want to look at temptation. We want to stare it in the face and be strong enough to walk away, be strong enough to not give in. But in the Lord's Prayer in Matthew 6, Jesus said what? Lead us not into temptation. Right? He didn't put this out there and say, give us awesome strength in the face of temptation, or make us strong enough that temptation doesn't even bother us, it doesn't even ruffle our feathers. No, he said, lead us not into temptation. And if we look back two chapters in Matthew 4, we see that Jesus was in the desert, he was being tempted by the devil, he'd just come out of that experience, it was a difficult experience, and he's praying and he says, keep us far away from temptation. Don't like, oh, make me strong. You know, I can't tell you how many guys I've talked to, and they say, well, you know, I'm having trouble with this. I'm looking at stuff on the computer I shouldn't. I'm like, one, get rid of your computer, right? Get rid of it. I need it. Okay, two, there's filtering software we can put on there. And they're always like, yeah, but I just want to be strong enough. I'm like, why? Who are you trying to impress, right? You don't have to impress anyone. Lead us not into temptation. Stay far away from it. If something's causing you to sin, you get rid of it. If you can't have a computer, you don't get a computer. And if you need it filtered, I can help you find the things that will do that and make sure that you don't have to just be super strong, because we all have times where our defenses are down and where we're weak. Jesus knew that temptation was not something to mess around with. It was something to completely avoid. So avoid those things and have a plan to escape. Have someone that you can talk to before it becomes a problem, someone that might even notice a problem in you before it gets to the surface, somebody that cares enough about you to give you the hard truths that you really need to hear. Because when we live like Jesus, we live in freedom. Next up in 2:23, here's what he says about Jesus. When they hurled in their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. Living like Jesus means choosing peace. If we're going to live like Jesus, we have to choose peace. In Bob Goff's new book, he said, when people are flat wrong, why do I appoint myself the sheriff to straighten them out? Burning down others' opinions doesn't make us right. It makes us arsonists. Anybody else, your natural wiring is to appoint yourself as a sheriff? Just me? Okay, you can... Nobody put you guys are a bunch of liars. Okay. Anybody else? Your tendency to lie and not raise your hand in church? No, but that's so true, right? When somebody is wrong, we want to be the one to fix it. There's so many of us, that's our wiring. We want to be the one that does that. I want to tell you, if you want to live like Jesus, walk away from the fight. Walk away from the fight. You have to choose peace over choosing to always be right. You have to choose peace over choosing to never let someone wrong you. Choosing peace means choosing meekness. And a lot of us push back. We don't want to be meek, but I will tell you again, meekness is not weakness. It's strength under control. And that's a dignified thing to be. Jesus has some pretty great things to say about what happens to the meek. But to be able to do this, I think we have to understand the motivation that allowed Jesus to do it. Did you see that in the verse that we looked at? Why was Jesus able to do this? Because he entrusted himself to the one who judges justly. That's why he could do that. Now, let me suggest to you that when we fully trust God as well, we will find ourselves more able and more apt to choose peace. Because if all we have, if all we can rely on is our own ability to take the wrongs in our world and to make them right, if that's all we have, then absolutely, fight on, my feisty friends, right? Don't give in. Let's go. Let's get this. Let's make it right. But if we're trusting in a God who is bigger than us and more powerful than we will ever be, and if we're trusting in a God who judges justly, then we can relax. We can exhale. It's not on me to fix all the wrongs. God can handle it. But I want you to see super clearly that choosing peace is not this just passively hoping that peace comes our way. It's not floating down the river, and if peace is what comes, then great. No, in 3:11, 1 Peter 3:11, here's what it says. They must turn from evil and do good. They must seek peace and pursue it. Seek and pursue are strong words. When you are seeking something, when you are pursuing something, you are going hard after it. If you think of a police chase, they'll use that terminology. They'll say that they're in pursuit. At least they do on TV. I've never been in a real police chase on either side, in case you're wondering. But they'll say, you're in pursuit, right? That doesn't mean that the police officer is just parking his car to see if the person goes by. No, they're going after that person. They are in pursuit. If you're like me and you married way out of your league, you know what it's like to seek and pursue something, right? You get that. You understand that principle. Well, that's what he's saying about peace right here. It's not just take peace when peace comes. It's saying seek it and pursue it and choose peace, because loving or living like Jesus means choosing peace. Then in 1 Peter 3:8 through 10, listen to these three verses. Finally, all of you, be like-minded, be sympathetic, love one another, be compassionate and humble. Do not repay evil for evil or insult with insult. On the contrary, repay evil with blessing, because to this you are called, so that you may inherit a blessing. For whoever would love life and see good days must keep their tongue from evil and their lips from deceitful speech. Now, there's a continuation here from choosing peace, right? We're choosing peace. We're choosing not to repay evil with insults, we're choosing instead to bless the people that treat us poorly. But these three verses really center on the crucial part that our mouths play in living like Jesus. Now, this will be a really quick point, because we actually started 2018 out with this entire series called Watch Your Mouth. And again, that's available on our app. It's on our website. You can listen to it as a podcast. But living like Jesus means watching our mouth. If we want to live like Jesus, we've got to watch your mouth. Our Bible Trek kids are going through a series on honesty right now, and I got to teach with them last week, and we were talking about the power of your tongue. Because think of how small your tongue is compared to your foot or your leg or your shoulder, unless you got a really weird tongue. And if you do, I'm glad you're here. This is a place for all sorts of people. But your tongue is likely a lot smaller than your leg, but your tongue has also gotten you into more trouble than your leg will ever get you in. I believe that more Christ followers damage their testimonies with their tongue than with anything else. Or maybe more Christ followers damage their testimony with their fingers on Facebook. And frankly, guys, I can't preach about Facebook again, all right? For the love of all that's good, please just act like Christians on the internet, okay? That's all out there for everyone to see. That's all I'm going to say about that. You can undo so much work of your testimony with just a few evil words or just a little bit of deceitful speech. And people are constantly watching us to see if our words and our beliefs go hand in hand or to see if they are in conflict with each other. So we have to watch our mouths. It's a crucial aspect to living like Jesus. And then Peter moves in the next verses in 13 and 14 to remind us of what I started out by telling you today, that living like Jesus was never intended to be easy. He asked the question, who's going to harm you if you are eager to do good? But even if you should suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear their threats. Do not be frightened. Now, he's talking to churches that are suffering through times of persecution right now. He's not saying this lightly. He's not saying this to people that think that we're suffering, you know, in the way that in a light way, in an easy way. He's talking to people that are really suffering, and he's saying, hey, if you live out your faith, if you truly live like Jesus, you might suffer even just for doing what is right. Because living like Jesus means enduring hard times. It does. It means enduring hard times. Peter had endured a lot of hard times when he was writing this, and he would go on to be crucified for being the leader of the Christian church after Jesus. So again, he's not saying this lightly. He's not just throwing this out there. Some of you have missed out on promotions because of your beliefs. You've missed out on things at work because you are known as a religious person, or you're known as a Christian person, or one of those people. You might have given up status in your company because you don't go out to happy hour and get trashed with your bosses and other people do, and that gives them a relational in that you don't have. You might be mocked as one of those crazy people that will take a beautiful Sunday like this, one of the first warm days that we've had in like 3 years, and you would come and sit here and listen to this. You could be home relaxing, you could be mowing your lawn, you could be playing in another golf league, and you might be mocked by some people for that. Young people, you will encounter people who will not want to be your friend because you try to live your life like Jesus. And if you live like Jesus, you won't fit in the crowd. And I know that that can be extremely painful at times, especially at certain stages of life. And Peter looks at all of that. He looks at all of our suffering. He looks at anything we go through, and he says to all of that, good. He says, good, you are blessed. He says, don't be afraid of people. Don't be afraid of hard times, because when that moment happens, when you begin to suffer, you are living like Jesus. And so he doesn't make a mockery of our hard times, but he says, good, good, you want to live like Jesus. This is what Jesus did. And this is really important, because when we live like Jesus, something extremely valuable and important and powerful can happen. Look at our next two verses, 15 and 16. He says, but in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience, so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander. Living like Jesus means pointing people to hope. If we live like Jesus, it will give us the opportunity to point people to hope. Now, please, 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 don't miss the gentleness and respect part. Okay, never be a jerk for Jesus. Jesus is not asking for that. Jesus doesn't want that. If you're out there doing that, if that's the sword you're carrying, he would like you to put it down, and I would too. But when we live like Jesus, the people around us will notice. Even those same people that I just said that might not really like it, for some of them, for hopefully many of them, they will come to the point where they want to know how you have accessed a hope that they don't have, how you have accessed a hope that they know they're lacking. Now, I've often said that I've had a front row seat to watch some of you go through some incredibly painful losses, to walk through unbearably difficult seasons of life. And there is something incredibly powerful about seeing the strength and the grace and the hope that God gives to his people when they need it the most. And I've watched some of you go through gut-wrenching, heartbreaking losses, and you've done it with such peace, and you've done it with such hope that even though I know the reason for the hope that you have, I still find myself drawn to that, to say, God, you are a good God when you offer this to us when we need it the most. Because that's what happens. People look at you and they see a hope that the world did not give you. They see a hope that the world cannot take away from you. And they say, I don't know what they have, but I know that I need that. And those are the times that people ask us that question. It's almost, I would say maybe universal, maybe completely, not even almost, universally born out of moments of suffering. It really is. No one ever asks, hey, everything's gone so well in your life. You know, things have just gone exactly how you've planned, exactly how you lined it up, and you just do it all so, so well. Can you tell me how you do that? No one's ever asked me that at good moments of life. No one's ever put that together and said, oh, I really want to know, how do you get through the good times with such hope? But when we go through our lowest moments, and we come through it with God, and we come out the other side with God, that's when people want to know. So how would you answer someone who asks you to give a reason for the hope that you have? How would you answer that? Well, Peter asks here, are you prepared to do that? Because when you live like Jesus, it is going to happen. When we do that, that will be the result. So there's a pretty substantial list here. I want to go back through it and put this all together, because living like Jesus, it means living in freedom. It means choosing peace. Living like Jesus means watching our mouth. It means enduring hard times, enduring suffering. And ultimately, living like Jesus means pointing people to hope. But I told you earlier that God does not expect us to just magically do those things on our own. I told you that God will give us everything that we need to live like Jesus. But in order for that to happen, we have to spend time with him. We have to spend time in his word. We have to spend time learning who he is. We have to learn what he's done. We have to learn what he wants to do in our lives. Now, we know this is how it works. We are very clear on how this works. Parents, you have told your kids that you don't want them hanging out with bad kids because they will become like the bad kids. And you know that to be true, right? You know that you're going to become like your closest group of friends. At the beginning of seminary, they give us a test. It's called Myers-Briggs. It's a personality test probably a lot of you have done. And when I took that at the beginning of seminary, it was right around at the beginning when Amy and I were dating, I was 20-0 on the extrovert to introvert scale. It was as extroverted as they can measure on the test. And we took it again a little while ago after having been married to my very introverted wife and also having worked in ministry for a while. And not you guys, but people can be exhausting. It's like it's the other services. It's not the 9:30. And so what I found is that I went from 20-0 all the way down to 12-8. Still an extrovert, but it's really slid over because we started to meet in the middle there. We've started to become more and more like each other as we've spent more and more time together. Do you know when I started at Northgate, I didn't have a beard, and all of my jeans were this loose, and I had never used an Apple product. But do you know what happened? I spent a lot of time with this guy. And we become more and more like the people that we spend time with. My friends, you will not become more and more like Jesus if you don't spend time with him. You won't. If you don't spend time with him, if you don't spend time falling in love with him, getting to know him, knowing what he wants for you, you will not become more and more like him. And you will not become more like him if you only spend 1 hour a week with him. Or if you miss a week of church, maybe 1 hour every 2 or 3 weeks. We will become like Jesus when we spend time in regular prayer. When we spend time in prayer, we spend time reading our Bibles. Now, I always say like in the morning because I'm a morning person. My wife is not, and she wants you to know you can be a Christian and not a morning person. But you need to have that time. Set that aside. I encourage you 15 minutes a day, right? 15 minutes, get a comfortable chair, spend time praying, reading the Bible. You don't need a degree to do that. You just need an open heart. God just asks us to show up. He's not asking you to be the perfect one. He's not asking you to be the one with all the answers. He's not asking you to bring anything to that meeting other than yourself. But be there. Spend that time with him, getting to know him. Spend time listening to music that fills you with the love of Christ. I'm not somebody that listens to all secular music, and I hope I can still be your pastor after saying that. Listens to all Christian music. I do listen to some secular stuff. But I've found that particularly in the morning, I need to have that time to have worship music going in the house, in the car, to let God prepare my heart for the day. And if you don't follow the Northgate Church playlist on Spotify, you should, because you can hear all the songs we sing here. They'll be in your head all week, and then when we come in here to sing them together, you'll know them well. Spend time with godly influences. Get engaged in a small group. Be here. Spend time in the lobby. I know sometimes you got to run right after, but talk to people that want what's best for you and know the love of Christ. And then spend quiet time alone. I know people who say they're never closer to God than when they're out in nature. And if you're a hunter, I just gave you some really good ammunition. Good pun there. And you're welcome. But find those things, find those times where you experience Jesus, where you spend time with him, where you can get to know him, and you will, as a result, become more and more like him. You will become more and more like Jesus when you deliberately and systematically spend time getting to know and love Jesus every single day. Now, Anthony is going to lead us in a song because you didn't think I was going to sing during this message, right? That's why we keep him here. It's one of many reasons. And he's going to give us a second to kind of center ourselves. And my prayer is that for some of you, this song is going to be, yes, this is what I feel right now. For others of us, we may need to pray ourselves into this and say, God, this is the desire of my heart. Help me to get there.
Thanks for joining us on the Northgate Podcast. We hope this message has been a blessing to you as you walk with Jesus Christ. For more resources, visit our website at northgatefmc.com or download the Northgate app. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time.